Will bank earnings mark the high point of this earnings season? I'm Jeff Horwich. This is the Marketplace Midday Update Podcast. It is October 12th. It's a Friday. Good to have you with us, and hope you're heading into a fun weekend. Also on the show today, the EU gets a big award. You might have heard about it. We'll talk with the CEO of Twitter, and we have an economist proposing the previously unthinkable cooperation between Congress and the Federal Reserve. Look out.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune in to Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
Our third quarter earnings season continues today with profits from two of the country's largest banks. J.P. Morgan Chase beat expectations quite handily with record profits, up more than a third from last year. Earnings also beat expectations, not so dramatically, I guess, at Wells Fargo. This wave of bank earnings will be closely parsed to get hints on where the economy and the stock market might be headed. Here's Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman.
Analysts are expecting a pretty good performance this quarter. That's an easy mark to hit because last year, financial companies faced the U.S. credit rating downgrade and Europe's debt crisis. Now, banks are doing a bumper business in mortgages, says Christopher Whalen at Tangent Capital Partners.
They're writing a lot of new mortgages, mostly refinancing of existing mortgages, and this is almost all guaranteed by Uncle Sam. So these banks aren't taking any risk, and they're earning big fees.
J.P. Morgan and Wells Fargo have been hit with lawsuits recently over bad mortgages, written and repackaged in the housing bubble, says Moshe Orenbuch at Credit Suisse.
There are no legal troubles that are good news for any of the banks. I think the important point is that the financial ramifications of them are manageable within the kinds of reserves and earnings power that both companies have.
Overall, U.S. banks are expected to do better than other major sectors this quarter. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Martin Luther King Jr., Elie Wiesel, Aung San Suu Kyi, to these Nobel Peace Prize winners today we add the European Union. Yeah, it's not actually that odd. Looking back over the last 20 years, you can count about half a dozen times the Nobel Committee has honored an organization, though it's pretty rare to only honor an organization. The last time was Doctors Without Borders in 1999. The EU gets the Nobel for fostering peace and reconciliation in Europe in the six decades since World War II. From London, here's Marketplace's Stephen Beard.
The timing of the Peace Prize is, on the face of it, bizarre. Relations between EU member states could hardly be worse. Anti-German feeling has reached a peak, especially in Greece. Protesters there routinely brandish the swastika, wear SS uniforms and a Hitler moustache. The German insistence on austerity has provoked an angry backlash throughout much of southern Europe. There's even friction between Germany and its most crucial ally, France. But analyst Simon Tilford says that's exactly why they're giving the EU the Nobel Prize for Peace.
The region is deep in crisis. It's very difficult to see a way out of it because of the political differences between the member states. And I think this is just an attempt, really, to boost confidence, esteem, and just give the whole region a shot in the arm.
He says the Nobel Committee could have gone further and given everyone a laugh. They could have awarded Europe the Nobel Prize for Economics. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Okay, let's do the numbers. Well, as I've been watching, an initially positive day on Wall Street quickly turned sour, though it's not too bad. The Dow Industrials at this hour are down, not even a tenth of a percent. The NASDAQ is down about a tenth of a percent, and the S&P, good sense, the broader market, down the most of all, about a third of a percent. Those two banks we mentioned, Wells Fargo and J.P. Morgan, well, they're having a rough day. J.P. Morgan is down about a percent at this hour, and Wells Fargo looks headed for a particularly rough day, down more than 3%. Investors not so happy about those earnings, even though they beat expectations. We have the producer price index for the U.S. today, the prices received and reported by U.S. companies. That rose more than a percent last month. The main culprit, as usual these days, if you've been keeping track, it's the price of energy, which was up almost 5%. Without energy, producer inflation was flat. Get ready for the ad blitz for Windows 8 to start this weekend. People can start ordering the new operating system today, though it will actually be available on October 26th. Not sure yet what I'm going to do. I just bought a Windows 7 PC a little while ago, so I can get the upgrade for $15. Good deal, but who knows what they've been saying about Windows 8, right? And the Postal Service says the price of a stamp will go up January 27th to 46 cents. The USPS also plans to introduce a new global forever stamp for the first time. That'll cost $1.10 to start. Well, if you're like me, it was hard to resist pulling up social media during last night's debate. On PBS, at least, I found it really notable that even the pundits now work Twitter reaction into their analysis. This morning, we talked with the CEO of Twitter, Dick Costolo, about its new place in our civic firmament. Here's just a little bit of that.
We used to have a filtered, one-way view of events in the world from the media. For example, if you think about the debate, you would have a guru in the studio next to the news anchor describing what had just happened. Now, with Twitter, people want to know what everyone else thinks, and we're getting this inside-out, multi-perspective view of what's going on right now as it happens.
Twitter CEO Dick Costolo. For the full interview, you can head to marketplace.org. He talked with Jeremy Hobson. As we saw last night, politicians will strenuously debate the extent of this economic recovery. But just about everybody can agree it is sluggish. Some economists fear the recovery is so sluggish, it's possible we might never climb out, really, before the next recession inevitably comes along. At least not with the policy menu that we've got now. Which is why some economists are speculating on what you might call maybe nuclear option scenarios. The University of Oregon's Tim Dewey is one of those, and he laid out his thoughts in a recent blog post that I read the other day. It's called Why I Agonize About the Zero Bound. Tim, good to talk with you.
Thank you for having me on your show.
First of all, what's this wall that our ability to stimulate the economy is maybe running up against, this notion economists call the zero bound?
Well, the issue, the zero bound, is that interest rates are very low, and the interest rate the Federal Reserve typically uses as its monetary policy tool, the federal funds rate, is pretty close to zero at this point. And so the challenge is, how do you stimulate the economy further when your normal tool is pretty much used up all the capacity it has?
So you are suggesting, along those lines, something that, to my knowledge, is complete anathema: explicit cooperation and coordination between the Federal Reserve on one hand and Congress and the president. What difference could that make?
So the issue is, how do you move cash basically into the hands of people that are going to use it? And one of the ideas that we know would probably work is if you manage to do a monetary financed tax cut or monetary financed government spending. And the idea there is that literally you'll end up printing the money in some way, shape, or form in order to either finance that tax cut or that spending increase.
But by law, this kind of thing is not supposed to happen. Am I right? We have an independent central bank.
That's right. This sort of thing is not supposed to happen. We, in fact, have an independent central bank specifically to prevent the potential inflationary consequences of doing exactly what I just said that might need to be done. The reason that you might need to think about an alternative is if the economy wasn't being stimulated sufficiently through your normal tools. I wanted to have something to think about in case you ended up in a situation where we're still at the zero bound when the next recession hit.
Tim Dewey is an economist at the University of Oregon. His blog is Tim Dewey's FedWatch. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
We're a couple of weeks now into the fall TV season, and viewership is down 11% across the major broadcast networks. This is the biggest season of the year for rolling out new content. Is it the shows? Is it us? And how worried should they be in TV land? Stu Levine covers TV and movies for Variety. Good to talk with you, Stu.
You too. Thank you.
Within the overall decline in viewership, how does it break down, especially young versus older watchers?
Well, I mean, a lot of young watchers don't watch traditional television the way many older people do. People who are younger, watch on their cell phones or they watch on the internet. They don't sit in the living room and watch a TV show at 8 o'clock like many other, especially older viewers do. So the younger viewers have skewed down this fall season, while the older viewers, people about 40, 50 years and older, those numbers have remained the same or even gone up a little bit.
Network execs are saying this is, to some large extent, about technology. People are watching, but they just can't track it in the same way. Do you buy that as a mostly complete explanation?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, the way TV has changed is now so many people are watching their shows on DVR. And basically, the only shows that people feel they need to watch immediately are sporting events or news events. You know, a football game on Sunday night or Sunday afternoon or a Monday night football game, that's going to get a live viewer. You know, people are not going to watch that show 3 days later. But if it's a comedy on Fox or ABC or CBS, they have no problem watching that show 2-3 days later. So when the initial numbers come out the next day, those viewers aren't included in that. So that's why the DVR numbers really are being looked at more today than ever before.
Well, the networks can write it off by saying people are watching on DVR, they're watching on, you know, YouTube or Netflix or whatever, but those folks are skipping commercials or they're seeing different, cheaper commercials than otherwise. That's got to be a worry.
That is a little bit of a concern, but as long as the viewership is there, I don't think they're that concerned. Even when you're fast-forwarding through the commercials, you kind of still have an image of what the commercial is. And so while it's not a perfect scenario for the networks, at least the advertisers know their products are being seen. And so, I mean, there's a little bit of a concern for that, but the numbers I don't think are as down as some people might anticipate.
Stu Levine covers television for Variety. Thanks, Stu.
You're welcome.
The web browser that says it's got your back today kind of has its own back up against the wall. This week, Firefox had to recall the most recent version of its browser because of a security problem. The flaw could have let hackers see a user's browsing history. Firefox's maker, Mozilla, has issued a patch, but it is still not out of the woods. Here's Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer.
Now, I use Firefox. I've resisted the allure of Google's shiny Chrome browser because I'm worried about privacy. I ignore the catcalls that I'm not cool because I use Firefox. I've never been cool. Why start now? But this security glitch has me spooked. Jeff Howe teaches multimedia journalism at Northeastern University. He doesn't think Firefox will lose a lot of users because of the flaw, because people hate to change browsers.
They would rather curse under their breath, have Firefox automatically provide the patch.
And that's probably what I'll do. But Howe says Firefox can't afford another big mistake. And then there's that coolness factor I mentioned. Roger Kay is a tech analyst with Endpoint Technologies. He says Firefox hasn't realized the computing market has changed.
It's become more like the automobile market, where it's about consumer marketing and branding and style and things like that.
Kay says Firefox has to get up to date or die. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
All right, winding down here for folks excited about the prospects of mining in outer space. And who's not, really? Well, here's something to really drool over. Researchers at Yale are reporting on a planet about twice the size of Earth that they believe is made up in large part of diamonds. Now, before the De Beers folks start building their rocket ship, the planet is 40 light years away. Interestingly, the part of the planet not made of diamonds seems to be made of graphite, which could be a giant boon, I guess, to the pencil industry of the distant future. And finally, last time you called in sick to work, how sick were you, really? Okay, now I'm sure you were completely incapacitated, right? But other people, not so much. A new CareerBuilder.com survey found a third of workers admit calling in sick over the past year when they were not. The survey also asked employers the most memorable excuses that they had heard for missing work, and those include, my toe is stuck in a faucet, my dog is having a nervous breakdown, I'm suffering from a broken heart, and the one that really jumps the shark, my grandmother's body is being exhumed today. Yikes. I suppose if that were the case, you would need to take the day off. I'm Jeff Horwich. That's all for the Marketplace Midday Update podcast. Have a good weekend. We're coming to you from APM, American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.